Hey everyone, you're listening to the LFC Podcasting Couch, and this episode's brought to you by Pharmacy Mart, Fairfield, New South Wales. Now, if you mention this podcast to the team, you'll receive 20% off their entire vitamin and sports supplement range. That's Pharmacy Mart opposite the Fairfield train station. And if you want any more location details, head to pharmacymart.com.au. Now, let's get on with the show.
Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!
Hello and welcome to episode 92 of the LFC Podcasting Couch. I've been waiting for this podcast for a couple of weeks now and absolutely buzzing. I am delighted to welcome Paul Machin. You all know Paul Machin from the Red Men TV, also the Ball Street Network, Mach TV, the list goes on and on. Paul, welcome. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me and for that wonderful introduction too.
What can I say? We see you guys week in, week out. You're always there after the games up at Anfield or wherever the games are played, you know, doing the post-match reactions and chatting to the guys. And I think you've become now, for me, one of the sort of the key things that we look for as Liverpool fans now. You know, you're either listening to the Anfield Wrap, we're tuning into Red Men TV. I'm quite happy to say that I pay my subscription fee for Red Men TV. We'll get back onto that later. Don't worry.
Small round of applause for that.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, hey, if it gets me an interview on my pod, do you know what? I'm going to take it. £2 is nothing to pay for the privilege.
Yeah, that kind of makes me a bit cheap, doesn't it, when you think about it?
Does really. Anfield Rat want £5, you know, thieving gits. So between the pair of you, you got £7. Maybe you need to put the rates up, but just not for me. That'll be absolutely fine. But the reason we wanted to get you on was we wanted to have a chat because obviously podcasting and I guess the world of football has changed so much recently with the advent of Twitter and YouTube, and we've got podcasts and we've got blogs going on, and you guys do video blogs, which you do really, really well. And even that's now spread out to, I guess you could call yours mini series. The transfer series that you're doing at the moment behind the paywall is just classic. Yeah. Pajak really fancies himself as an actor. There's no two ways about it. Just one of the funniest things I've seen. Yeah, I absolutely don't have a face for podcasts and vodcasts, so I just stay behind the mic. It's safer that way. But what we really wanted to talk to you about today and give you a chance to have a chat about was how on earth all this starts. We had a chat with, Nish had a chat with some guys a couple of weeks back now, I think it was. And basically, they started up with a dictaphone inside a cardboard box, a cereal box. Don't ask me why, but they did. and it was the Day Trippers. And they had a chat with those guys. And it was fascinating to hear about it. So yeah,
having gone on the Day Trippers podcast in the early days, that now makes a lot of sense as to the audio quality at the time. I never knew that. So there you go. Yeah. Those guys are listening. Brilliant. Your secrets are out.
Absolutely, it was brilliant the way they talked about it, and it was literally, you know, they kind of set it up and this was how they were going to do it, and away they went from there. And they're quite open about their pods. You know, their pods are very specialist. You either love them or you hate them. They're very Marmite, you know, and it's very off the cuff. Nish doesn't like to edit his podcast at all. He just puts it out as it is. If it goes wrong, so be it, put the mistakes in. Others are a little bit more professional maybe and a little bit more edited and subtle. But I just, there's something about Red Men TV that I really enjoy. And actually the Ball Street stuff as well, I really enjoy. And some of the live shows that you've done. But to get to there from where you began, how on earth does that journey start and what does it look like?
So I think we were talking about, you know, speculating about a lot of it starting in pubs. And that's where most good ideas start for fellas, I guess, isn't it? Particularly when this around football. But yeah, I guess it's weird. I've probably told this story that many times that it probably alters subtly along the way. But the gist of it is very much like I come from a media background. I did that at university, and I was looking for something to do, just something to keep myself ticking over, to keep myself occupied. I was working in pubs and bars and restaurants and everything in between. And but we'd all get together and watch the Liverpool games or what have you. And this is around, I moved back to Liverpool from Sheffield, where I'd been at university. It was between the Leverkusen the legs of the Leverkusen game in the Champions League run of 2004-2005. So Liverpool became were amazing in that period. So we were always out every week watching the Champions League games, having a bevy and picking it apart after the fact. And that's probably where the sort of genesis of it was, really. And I, we'd all grown up, and people of our, I say of our age, Rich, you know, I don't want to age us, but I do this all the time, every time I open my mouth. You know, we grew up with Badil and Skinner's fantasy football on Friday nights, and Soccer AM with Tim Lovejoy when it was good, because it's shite now.
it is.
And, you know, we grew up with that amazing, irreverent, funny, you know, football content. Didn't take itself too seriously, but was just dead entertaining. And that, we were like, we think, for a start, why don't people make that anymore? But also, LFC TV was a burgeoning thing, I guess, at the time, and it used to be it was free on telly at the time as well. Yeah. And it still is a bit. You know, I respect the people who work in it, and a lot of effort goes into that channel, but it's crap as well. It's just boring. it is what it is. It's designed to do. It is what it says on the tin, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's not very entertaining. It's the same old stuff over and over again. The same pacified, pasteurized opinions, and it didn't represent a lot of the conversations we were having about the club. So, basically, that was kind of where it started, and we wanted to start making something that was the sum total, I guess, of our influences and needs as fans, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right in what you say about LFC TV. I think it's fair to say they're getting better as well. The quiz show that they're doing at the moment that they ran last season and they're doing this season with Robbie and I think, is it McAteer they're doing?
I've seen the trailers for it. Yeah.
And actually it's mildly entertaining for 30 minutes if for no other reason than just to watch Farley and Fowler giving everybody else a load of grief. But I think you're right. It does what it needs to do. It's a means for us to watch football games. It's a mean for us to watch, especially now with the preseason friendlies coming up. You know, it's an opportunity for us to tune in and see that where we wouldn't see it on mainstream TV. But it's not that reflective, I think. And what we want to see is exactly what I guess you guys are doing, which is putting out at the end of a game, raw emotions, you know, how people are feeling about what's going on. And actually, the other thing I like is the banter, you know, on the couch, all of you guys. I think some of the funniest footage I've seen is when you're actually watching a game, because it's really bizarre to watch you watching a game live just purely for the reactions at the end of it when you're all going absolutely mental. Paige Agg especially just loses it so many times. And it's football fans, isn't it? And it's exactly what we want to see. So I get that you sort of, that's how the idea comes about. So how do you go about turning that from a bunch of lads in a pub having a chat to then having your own studio, all the gear, everything that goes into it, a production schedule? I guess you're employing people now. It's so much bigger than it was when you started off.
Funnily enough, I equated it today. It's become like, if anyone's ever seen Fight Club, it's become like Project Mayhem in that. We've got just teams of young lads who are just bought into it. If we want to come in and get experience and they want to do bits and pieces, we just act like the office was shocker today. And you never think that's possible when you begin. You know, you're editing videos for 12 hours a day in your pajamas at home in a pokey back bedroom. wondering what when your wife's going like, why are you doing this? What why are you not going out and earning real money when you're doing this kind of stuff. So, the day trippers lads. Then I guess it was, we had some experience. There was a couple of lads involved. There was Aubrey, who became a regular presenter on the show. He actually came on as staff for a while. We had both had that media background, and he had a camera which we borrowed for a point. There was another lad who we'd gone to school with, and he had a really good camera, and he used to turn up with the camera. He'd always turn up like an hour late, so we'd have to wait for him to turn up with the camera to film, and it was all it was just begs stealing and borrowing things, basically. You know, we had no lighting, we had no microphones, we just had what we thought was a decent camera. I got me then girlfriend, now wife, hand painted the first Red Men banner that went on the wall behind the presenter couch. We just went from there. You know, we filmed a pilot originally, We like the idea. YouTube. I didn't even know what YouTube was at the time. YouTube was that thing where you watched funny cat videos and stuff, which of course it still is. Well, that's more Facebook these days. So I had no concept of YouTube channels and what they were. So at the time, we went to LFC TV and said, listen, we've got this idea for a series. We've got the ability to deliver it. Is it something you'd be interested in? And they said, yeah, come in, have a chat. And so we did, and it was great, and they seemed really keen and really eager. And I'd then did the foolish, you know, in my youthful exuberance and naivety, left them this folder of ideas for how Red Men ties into making the LFC TV more engaging, more involving with fans, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No surprise that a number of those ideas have subsequently appeared on the channel over the years. But they went very cold on us, like overnight. And we just thought, well, we're waiting. We'll go and make the pilot. Mm. So we did. Eventually, after they cancelled a ton of meetings on us, and I'd like used up all my holiday days or whatever, we finally got our foot back in the door, showed them the pilot. They loved it. You know, a couple of people involved laughed their asses off. Mm. And we were like, great, this is great. And then they sat down and they said, oh, well, does that gag need to run that long? Does it need two presenters? And bear in mind, this was a point where LFC TV used to have Matt, whose surname escapes me now, used to just present stuff on his own. It'd be him in a studio talking to camera. And it was like, so you just want it all to be exactly like you do it already. Yeah. So nothing came of it. And I was a bit gutted about that. So we kind of sat on a DVD on a shelf in my house for about 6 months or something like that. And then this is a very, very long story. I'll try my best to do the abridged version of this. I was actually working for Chris, who's co-owns Red Men with me. He was managing a restaurant in Liverpool, and I was just literally doing the odds and sods jobs. Deliveries, shoveling shite, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I got signed off from work. I had shoulder surgery, and I was literally sat around the house for 2-3 months, bored out my brains. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something I can do with this. So I went back in, I re-edited a few bits, and then it got around to towards the summer. I discovered YouTube as a platform. Thought I'll put it on there, see if people like it. And it went from there, really. We started doing some new bits and pieces around World Cup 2010. Christ.
Oh no, don't yeah.
Just did more and more in the hope that, you know, the logic always was, we like this, our mates like this, we just went on the logic that if there's just going to be more people like us, and if we like it, then other people will like it, so we're just going to try and get it out to people. And that's basically what's happened. You know, year on year, it's just gotten bigger and bigger, and more people get onto it, and it's bizarre. You know, it's become a sort of a miniature phenomenon, which is, you know, more than I could have hoped for, really.
Yeah, I mean, it has become just that. It's just one of those, I will sit there, and at the end of a game, so I'll be at home watching the game, because obviously trying to get up to Anfield to go to see games is just a nightmare anyway. But, you know, so I'll be sitting, and once that's done, the next thing I'm looking for is, right, okay, when are the videos going up? After the game, what's everybody else thinking about it? What did they think about the game? And trying to piece that. So I'm sort of waiting for you guys to give me the next part of my LFC experience, if you like, when I'm not there at the games. And when I am there, I always find it highly amusing that I can see you guys sort of just setting up and everybody sort of piling over and coming for a chat. And it's just great to see that as well when you're actually at the games and to feel a part of it. But at what point do you sit there and go, hang on a minute, this could be my full-time job now. This will pay the bills.
Well, we did the first year, and it was really hard graft. It was, it's setting up originally when you're trying to balance your working life, and you're doing this thing that's making you no money. You're just getting abuse in the comments, and you think, and you don't know, it's funny, but it, you know, it's one of those things that I always take to heart, because if it's something you believe in. It feels like a personal affront when people don't get on with it or whatever, whether that's because then, you know, it's just not for them or whatever. But it was, you know, we got through that first year, and I can't even remember what it was now. We probably got to about 5,000 subscribers on YouTube in the first 12 months, we got to the back end of that season, so that would have been the 2010-11 season. And we kind of, we just, I remember thinking, right, okay, I think that's enough. I think that proves that it's going to be something. We've done some really cool stuff in that time. You know, we were the only people covering the ownership protests that first summer,
yeah,
with the Hicks and Gillette and stuff like that. You know, the BBC and all that and Sky Sports had no interest in that. You know, we were there at parades and marches and, you know, protests and all that kind of stuff. And then we managed to interview, just by being nice to people, we managed to get a couple of interviews with people. We got a Suarez interview, which was amazing. And I would think, yeah, okay. And the simple logic goes, you think, well, okay, the only way to sustain this is, well, we need to go properly professional. We need to make a proper business. So we kind of said, well, what we'll do is we'll go down the paywall model, which no one was really doing at the time, but we thought, well, this might work. We'll make this one super show, which is what we always wanted to do, which was our fantasy football style, half an hour, once a week, magazine show, loads of cool features and sketches and all that. So Chris, I took a loan out. He got a credit card, and he basically took them. You know, we bought a printed banner rather than the handmade one, and we painted a few walls. We properly annexed the dining room in my house, which my wife wasn't particularly happy about. But you know, it meant I didn't have to move couches around every time we wanted to film. It meant it was permanent. It was a permanent fixture. So you know, there was which implies that, you know, a bit more, you're taking it more seriously and what have you. Because when you've just lost to Bolton, and you've then got to walk into it, go home, move two couches around, pin something up into the highest possible reach of the thing, set the TV up, move this, do that. Surprisingly, your motivation to film stuff gets sapped a little bit.
Yeah, I get that.
So we did that, and we launched it. We paid for the web. We paid a ton of money to get the website built, and we just went from there, basically. And that was, you know, it was probably, I had to remember the time framings on it, but then it was a perfect storm of that started to work, and then we became YouTube partners as well. At the time, we became an official YouTube channel, effectively. Okay. We started to get some advertising revenue in, and that was when I jumped in, like, out of my job in the, it's probably about 5 years now, so it was, I think I'm right in saying it was like it might have been the Christmas of 2012 or maybe the year after, something like that. But yeah, it was just, you know, on a pittance, by the way. You know, it was that I was earning an absolute pittance doing a shitty job, and that was my way of doing it. You know, I knew that if I had I could go and work a better job and have a better, you know, better life and be more comfortable paying our bills, which we really struggled with. And, you know, we did a new roof on the house, which had to wait. There was water pissing in from everywhere. But that was what I had to do. I had to financially destitute my family, because I knew it was going to be, I wasn't going to be, you know, it's not the kind of industry where you go, oh, I'm just going to start paying myself a five figure sum of money. Doesn't work like that. You've just got to reach a point where it's just about enough to keep your head above water if you're passionate about it, and you go from there. And that's kind of what we did.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you're driving around in red Porsches with Red Men 1 as your number plate. You know, it's not that kind of, you know, and Payjack's got Red Men 2. You know, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, it is a lot of hard work. And I get that. And I mean, even just from sort of Nish and the rest of us doing the pods, you know, we know what it's like as well, where it's just like, right, okay, I've just got home from work right now. I need to go and do that pod, and then we can get it up at that time. And, oh, you know, Nish is going to go and do this. And it does take up a hell of a lot of time when you're trying to do other everyday things as well. And I think the other thing for you guys especially is where, you know, at the moment, or for the last couple of weeks, where it's been kind of a little bit quieter because the players are all off having their downtime and everything else, Red Men TV doesn't just stop. You know, there's still other stuff to do. So it's not like you can turn around and say, oh, right, that's it then, lads. You know, James Pierce gets to jog off for 3 weeks. He went to Australia, followed the rest of them and stayed down there. Smart move, James, by the way. What a clever move that is. His Snapchat was just full of him. Yeah, just running around in Australia.
Genius.
Oh, is it ever?
Genius from Pierce.
You know, yeah. Probably said...
Yeah, no, you're dead right, though. It is that, because, again, I remember my wife kind of saying to me, well, you said you'd get to this point and stop. I was like, well, to be fair, your job doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And effectively, you know, this is the cross you have to bear. And I'll never complain about it. I absolutely love the world we're in. I know I love where it's going, and what it's been able to bring us is just, you know, it's been absolutely life changing. But it is, once you commit to it, you've got to keep it going. I have an analogy of a friend of mine who used to play poker online, and he did it for a living, but it wasn't like it wasn't a glamorous living. You know, you're paying, you're sat in a darkened room on your own for a lot of the days playing poker on your own to basically make what effectively works out at minimum wage. You know, he wasn't having to go to an office all day and work with dickheads doing something that he absolutely loathed. So bonus, but also, you know, as I say, it's not the most glamorous thing. So you do have to, still there's a lot of work that's required to go in. And as you say, you can't stop because, particularly once you've got the paywall, you know, who the fuck's paying money for something that doesn't exist? You know, we owe it to the people who, but fortunately, Richard, you'll never have to worry about that because you'll never stop. This is the mutual respect thing for the people who do support what we do, is that we could, you know, we could turn around and go, fuck it, lads, let's go and have 6 weeks off because we've worked really hard this year. No, bollocks, you know, these are people who, you know, people pay to make it a reality. The people who subscribe to the website make the Redmen TV a thing. Wouldn't exist without those people. So, you know, would never dream of it. It would be a slap in the face to those people for us to turn around and go, all right, we're going to put our feet up and play Tekken for 6 weeks. You know, not that I'm not playing Tekken periodically, like, but, you know, just in my off time.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Downtime in between all the recordings and stuff. I mean, it's fascinating just to sort of listen to how it's all built. And there are, I'm sure, other people that will listen to this pod, and they'll listen to it because you're on it and they're interested in you and how it all comes together. And some of them will have aspirations of doing similar things and wanting to achieve it. I think what's interesting is you guys talk about boxing things off a lot. I think between yourselves and the Anfield Wrap, it's pretty much boxed off. You know, that sort of, if you're looking at the flagships now, whether you want to agree with that or not, you can be fine and be modest and say, oh, well, I don't think that's quite the case. But personally, I think it is. You know, for podcasts, I know you guys do your podcasts. I'm a big fan of your podcast, although I watch the videos of it. And every time I see it, I can't help but be remembered of Alas Smith and Jones. And I seem to think that you've almost gone for that kind of, you know, the Smith and Jones look, where you sort of look across a moody lit microphone and you turn around and go,
absolutely,
Salah. And he goes, yeah, it's all right, him. What do you think? Yeah, it's all right. Well, say all right. Yeah. He could be better. And it's just this whole kind of thing. And it's just every time I watch it, I go, oh, it's just the Smith and Jones podcast. And it's great. But there's everything for everyone, isn't there? We've got the Anfield Wrap, who this week did a really interesting freebie pod that they did. I don't know whether you've heard it, but they've had a journo, an agent, a player, all on talking about the transfer industry and how it kind of works and stuff like that. And I think that's where the Anfield Wrap are really, really good. And it was really interesting. The journo was really, really hard to listen to because he was being so cagey the whole way through the whole thing. And it was, I can't think of his name now. It's the guy from The Times. His name slipped me now. Paul Joyce. Yeah. Oh, wow. So they had Paul Joyce on, and it was like, wow, okay. And then they had an agent on, and he was absolutely fascinating. And I think that's great because they do that side of things very, very well. And then we've got you guys that come in, and yours is so much more with the visual side of things. And I think that's really important that you've got these two options, haven't you? You can listen to the Anfield Wrap while you're driving your car, but when you're at home and you're sitting around and you just want to tune into something visual and have a laugh and watch the lads playing around and stuff, then you've got that option. And I think that's a perfect balance. The other thing I was interested to talk to you about was obviously the Ball Street Network. That's quite, I would say it's quite recent. It's fairly newish onto the scene. Obviously, you guys have all got together. How did that come about, and what kind of impact has had, do you think, on the whole Redmen TV and everything? Because I think Arsenal fans TV, rightly or wrongly, I watch it for amusement factor. I'm not going to lie to you. I just,
you're not the only one in that regard, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing better than watching the Arsenal fans go into complete meltdown after every single game. And I think for the last three or four months of the last season, I think that's certainly brought them more into the spotlight. But I don't think people look at Redmen TV in the same way. And I don't know whether you agree with that or not. I think it has a different feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, is Arsenal Fan TV have crossed over. I think they're now, they've broken out from being what they are. because it is the thing with fan media. It's a natural evolution of the fanzine, or you know, and then what was then the forum. You know, these are just places where fans of a certain club talk about their club. Hmm. Now, the problem with it is though, because new media is what it is, and it started to happen with forums. You could go onto those forums and you just see how other people talk about their clubs, and more often than not, it's fucking hilarious because their views are so everyone's views on their own club are just so biased.
Yeah.
Objectively. Hmm. And the problem is because those opinions all come into conflict with everyone else's opinions. You know, we all sing by far the greatest team the world's ever seen. Every club's got their own version of that. It can't be true of 92 football clubs just in the football pyramid,
let alone
the ones that, you know, the ones beneath it and then, you know, beyond. So, and I think that's the issue that has with that. Of course, and exactly what you're saying about Arsenal Fan TV is that people do that's becoming famous for being famous. It's when PSG lost in the Champions League and there's memes of PSG Fan TV and it's the guys with the Photoshop PSG badges onto the Arsenal Fan TV guys. That's what they've become. They've become synonymous with a type of broadcasting and with, to be honest, a type of reaction to football. And I guess I agree in that we don't have that as much. There's people who, you know, some people are embarrassed by Arsenal Fan TV and some people are embarrassed by us. They will be. You can't please 100% of the people 100% of the time. So, you know, there will be people who lump all of Fan TV in together. And I think that's a little bit of a concern for us, given that, you know, we see it as a legitimate, you know, media form. So there's definitely that, but we are very different to them. That Chris always says to me, he said, when Arsenal Fan TV lose, their views go up. When Liverpool lose, ours go down, because no one wants to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the thing, because exactly as you say, more people consume that. I think because not saying that predominantly their audience is non-Arsenal fans. It's not. It's a massive, massive community of Arsenal fans. But there are loads of people who, as you say, go on there just for shits and giggles, basically. And I don't think we have as much of that. That might be a necessary evil. It might be the price of crossing over a threshold of popularity or success or reach or whatever, which we might have to cross that bridge when we get there. But I do see us as being different in that regard.
Yeah, but I think there's another flip side to this as well, isn't there? That I think with Arsenal Fan TV, and I don't want to talk about them too much because this is about you guys, but I think with all the problems that are going on with Arsene Wenger and the toxic nature, I think, of how their fan base is at the moment. And we've been there. We've experienced that before, where you've had, you know, half of the Liverpool fans were Rafa and the other half were pro Rodgers. And now we have a figurehead in Jurgen that, quite frankly, I don't think I've experienced a Liverpool fan base as united now as they have been for a very long time. And I think that's almost the line, isn't it? Whereas at the moment, everything's going wrong with Arsenal at Football Club and everyone's very bitter about it and getting very embroiled to the point where, you know, they're showing punch-ups and this, that and the other. Where actually, for Liverpool Football Club, strangely, it's quite harmonious at the moment. Not that you'd believe it on Twitter at the minute, but in general, everyone's quite happy. You know, four more signings, we'll all be loved up.
Yeah, no, completely, and that's it. And I think Liverpool is that. There's the thing. Like the fan cams and stuff. It's not what our channel was built on. We do it because I love giving people a place to voice their opinions, and we get some incredible. Was that lad last season who talked about Liverpool being like a tourist club, and a few people took that to being like it was like an isolationist Liverpool thing, or maybe it was a racist thing or whatever. And it wasn't. It was just a young local lad expressing his concern at this feeling that his club was being taken away from him, or you know, the stadium was being filled with people who just didn't really care enough about the club. And I think that's echoed by a lot of people, whether they're from Liverpool or otherwise. And I love that that went basically viral for the right reasons, as opposed to people going losing the shit over something, you know. And you know, equally, we've had, you know, the other one was an Irish lad complaining about it was when they had the walkout on 77, and that's been taken out of context and used in other ways. But again, it was a positive thing talking about an important issue. And then, of course, you got the Harry Potter outside Stoke who talked about flares being a disgrace. Oh. So, you know, you get the joke. You get dickheads just as much. But the thing for us, ours was always built on, again, it's just lads sat in a room talking about footy. That was always what the core of ours is, and that's what it'll stay in. What's great and what we've seen doing the Ball Street Network is that so many of these channels, they come up in similar ways, but they've got different approaches to how they're doing things. And that's why there's a real shared bond between us and the lads who do these different channels. You know, when we started out, no one was doing this. We were the first to the party that we'd broken into this function room, and all the spread was laid out ready for this amazing party, and we were the only ones there. And then a few years later, there's a Man United channel came, Arsenal Fan TV came a little bit after that, and now you've got, you know, just in the Ball Street Network, you've got Talk Norwich City, you've got Barefoot TV, Stoke Toffee TV, who, despite the fact that they never told me, he's a great lad. Yeah.
He still cracks me up. He's one of my favourite guests on it, I've got to be honest with you.
That's great, yeah. United People's TV, the Man United channel, there's a Chelsea channel, there's a Southampton channel, West Ham Fan TV. Those lads are amazing. You know, and it is that we all come from different backgrounds, but it's great to, it's like we share the same stresses and pains of what we do to achieve what we want to do. And, you know, it's what's brilliant about the Ball Street Network is that it's very much it's just a big gang. You know, we're just a gang. We're basically like a big gang of mates that have come together, you know, almost not. There are certain channels in this space that are owned by a massive media company, Fremantle, who own X Factor and Britain's Got Talent. They saw this as an opportunity to make a load of money off fans, and they set up a couple of channels. And it's not, you know, I won't go into them expressly, but, you know, there's a world of difference. They're basically, the arse has fallen out of them, the money's fallen away. They can't make it work because they're trying to treat it like a TV company. Whereas I know all the other lads who are running these things are doing them off their own back. You know, the guys who do Toffee TV, Ped's a taxi driver, and Baz who's the other guy is a social worker. So he has to go and deal with some of the, you know, the shit he sees on a daily basis, and then has to put that to one side and come and sit down and smile and talk in front of a camera when most of us would just want to oh my God, just go and have a cold shower and sit there and shut ourselves off from the world. These are the stuff, and that's what stands the Ball Street Network apart, and that's why for me it's I see it as the future of where this is all going. You know, like-minded individuals with a passion for this type of media, for new media, ganging up together to be stronger together, to fight against the old way of doing things and a stigma attached to fans making things as though it's somehow, you know, we're somehow a group of little animals who want to be locked away in a cage and whatever. I get so excited whenever I'm in the company of these people, and whenever I see them take a step forward, they break another milestone in their subscribers, and I think, you know, go ahead, this is just a brilliant time to be doing this.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that's nice about it as well, and I think that everybody benefits from, is that this is, to a certain extent, uncensored. You guys, there's no one turning around and going, oh, you can't say that, lads. You can't do that. You can't do this. You know, if you want to have a conversation about something, I mean, I think there's two things that one of the hardest things I watched on the Ball Street Network was when Arsenal Fans TV had that video that was sponsored by the Rag. And you obviously had I could tell that was difficult for you because it was written all over your face, and you found that a very difficult conversation to have with the guys about. But at the same time, it was used in a very positive way to turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, there's a bigger conversation that still needs to be had here about what's going on. And I think what we've seen in the last few days actually has shown that conversation has got an even bigger voice now, with, you know, all the clubs turning around and saying that, you know, there's no place for it anymore. And, you know, we're all pushing more to have it banned, and quite rightly. And I think the other thing that was really important that you said on that was that it was important that people remember and are educated on why we took this stance all these years ago, because a lot of people will obviously have forgotten about the origins of it. But then there's the flip side to that, which was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, which was when you did a transfer window live. And it reminded me of the early days of the Big Breakfast on Channel 4, where there was loads of you all in different rooms, and it was, oh, you know, now we're going to go over to so-and-so doing this one, and there's kind of you standing there in another part of the building going, oh, right, it's me that's on. Yeah, right, okay, we're going to do this. Yeah. And it was just one of the funniest things. And I think I messaged in a couple of times and you read a few things out, which as a fan, that's always great because you get, oh, they're talking about me. Oh, that's cool. But it just shows this, the beauty of it is that you can go in whatever direction you want and you've got that power rather than this commercial organization like Fremantle, for example, they're going, oh, well, actually, no, we need to tow this corporate line or we need to tie that. No.
Exactly, and it's funny you should say that because it was actually TFI Friday was the vibe I was going for, but the big breakfast, both Chris Evans vehicles, but yeah.
Take that all day long, it's fine.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, it's true. That was the thing we did. I had that idea for Deadline Day and we started that on Red Men, and then Borsley's had done one and it was a bit, it was okay. It was fine. I came aboard with Wall Street and said, yeah, I kind of want to do it this way. And I took over a few of them and it's just gotten bigger and bigger. And, you know, we've got this facility, Wall Street North, now up in Liverpool. Okay. It's a massive production facility. And that's where that was based. And so we had, you know, we had the upstairs studio, we had an office there where we had the Reed Network involved in that. And then we had guys doing sprints out in the car park. And, you know, when I got into doing all this, it was because I had ideas for stuff and I just wanted to make stuff, you know. I dream something up and see it be a reality, and that was very, very difficult to do via the mainstream means, you know, go make cups of tea for 3 years and maybe you might get a shot at being an assistant, you know, researching and then do this, and then fuck this, you know, can't be honest, I'm just gonna make stuff. And that's what Ball Street allowed us to do. Red Men did it too, but I had to build that platform from scratch to do it. But, you know, Ball Street came along at the right time, and we've been able to do some really cool things with that, you know, and appeal to a broader audience as well, which is the best thing, because, as I say, almost the same as in Red Men's regard. There were just a ton of like-minded individuals who think the same way about football and maybe don't necessarily have that support network around them, because, you know, the culture of going out to the pub and having your mates around as much is not quite what it was, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, whatever. People do consume football on their own a lot now, and in the bedrooms and in the living rooms, and they need someone to talk to. And that's where, you know, this it works on an individual sort of niche club by club level, but I think it works on a wider scale. You know, we do Social Club on a Monday, which is my show on Ball Street, which is very, you know, anyone who watches Red Men and that will see the similarities. It's four guys in a room,
big chairs, shirts all around the walls, chatting about footy, happy days. Yeah, no, without a doubt. So, okay, so we've got the Ball Street Network, we've got the Red Men TV, we've got the Red Men TV podcasts. Talk to me about Mach TV, because this has a very different feel. Is this you kind of, without wanting to sound like a critic, are you kind of, is this you just being you away from the Red Men TV side of things and just wanting to be, you know, almost like your own personal little project? Or
I think that the thing for me, I remember it's a great, like, it's not a quote per se, but it was, I'm paraphrasing something Noel Gallagher once said, and he talked about when he set up Oasis, and he was writing the songs and he could sing them, but he didn't feel comfortable. He could get people to play the guitars and be the band around him, but he didn't want to be the lone front man as such. Mm. You know, he liked getting Liam to sing the songs, and he liked having the guitar in front of him to kind of to hide behind a little bit. And it's not necessarily exactly that, but it's the best sort of analogy I can think of. That normally a lot of Redmen was just me talking to camera, but it was me talking to, just talking about Liverpool, things that had happened. So it's easy to talk about things and react. Whereas Mach TV was more me, and just give it a bit less of the filter and just having a bit more fun and just being able to have opinions on different things as well. I mean, a lot of it's still Liverpool stuff, because obviously that's a lot of what people know me for. It's still predominantly what I spend my time actively doing and thinking about. So a lot of those thoughts are there. But yeah, it was just about building myself a little corner of the world where I could do some stuff and not worry about affecting this bigger entity. I could just say, you know, I did a couple of videos on the general election and stuff, and it was, but it came about because you know, I'd become very, very disenfranchised with British politics over the course of a number of years. And so when it came round, and I remember thinking to myself, I wanted to have a platform to be able to discuss things, because I think people get embarrassed talking about politics sometimes, and it has a place in general life, and it's some people say it shouldn't be talked about in X, Y, and Z situations, but sometimes I think people are a bit too afraid to voice their opinions on things, as though it'll damage their reputations or whatever. Where you think you just gotta kind of be yourself. So you know, I wanted to have somewhere where, you know, I've built up this audience with Red Men TV, but that's Red Men TV's audience. You know, I've got a following now, you know, on Twitter, and I've got plenty of mates and a lot of guests. You know, not that I see any of them anymore, yeah. But I just felt like I wanted something to start creating a little platform to just do more stuff that I kind of fancied doing more than anything else.
And it's dead funny stuff. So if no one's been and seen it yet, if you do nothing else after hearing this pod, other than clicking the subscribe button for us and subscribing to Red Men TV, make sure you go onto YouTube, go and put a search in for Mage TV and have a look at the latest one about Liverpool not signing players, because it's just one of the funniest things, and it's great the way you do it, and there's these pauses, and then next thing you know you're there with a book flicking through and going, oh yeah, they haven't done anything either, and it's just a very, very funny, fluid way of putting something else out there, and I thoroughly enjoy looking at stuff like that. So Mage TV as well, so as if you hadn't got enough on your plate, then there was retro footy TV or retro TV.
Yeah, retro football TV. So that was actually been going slightly longer. That was my attempt to just do something a bit more generic in football, basically. You know, we had football's weird. The culture of football's changed so much just even in the last, you know, since we've been doing Red Men in the last 7 years. And again, it was a very similar notion that what's happening is a lot of it's being lost, and the way people talk about football, the way people react to football. I just love the notion of getting people together in a room and reacting to stuff and doing things. And as well, I'm big into my games as well.
Yeah.
And there's so many of these football games, and this is the way FIFA has changed. FIFA the game symbolizes everything that's gone wrong with football in general, because it's become this uber dominant force. If you don't like it, you're an absolute idiot. Yeah. If you don't buy it, you're ostracized from life because everyone plays FIFA. Well, when I grew up, there was like 10 football games a year, and you bought them all and you played them all, and you know, you'd wait for the new one to come out, and they all had their own kinks and flaws and foibles and all that kind of stuff, and you play all these different ones, and there's loads of great experiences and really dreadful experiences out there. So we started building up this back catalogue of old football games, essentially. So we've like got, we're at the point now where we've probably got about 70% of every football game that's ever been made, and like the room is chocker full of stuff. It's like we've got hundreds of these things. There's other elements we've not really touched, but there's loads of like the nostalgia value and stuff. It's the stuff I love, and again, it was just nice to do something a bit broader. Let me have an excuse to hang out with some people who do from different backgrounds and support different clubs and do some stuff. And you know, that we did it, we also did a retro Championship Manager series on there, which was on Red Men as well, where me and Chris got to act out the 2001-2002 season, etc. So yeah, good fun.
That was my introduction to the retro footy TV, and this was sadly our introduction to Chris Pajak's acting as well, which I think is probably what it will be most remembered for. And it was cardboard cutouts on the faces of the various different players that were being signed, and just loads of crazy stuff outside, and him throwing tantrums, and you were basically buying in the players and trying to get stuff sorted out. And it was,
and we got Emil Heskey as well, which is really got Emil Heskey.
Well, this was kind of brings me on to my next point. So you got all of these things. What is your highlight? Because I mean, there's been, like I said, I've watched a lot of the stuff you do, and you've done quite a lot of pretty cool stuff. So what would rate as your highlights? Because, I mean, I think we need to put this into context. This season, you were outside the LFC award bash, complete with camera and mic and, you know, interviewing and talking to players as they were coming in and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. you know, you've elevated a long way. So what's your highlight? If there was one thing that you could look back and go, that so far is my greatest Red Men TV or greatest moment, full stop, what's it going
to
be?
It's weird. To be honest, I'll pick one and then 20 minutes later, when everyone was done, I'd be like, no, it was this one. We have won a season. If we're looking, you know, we're looking maybe sometimes more. I mean, you mentioned it in the last 12 months, you know, we went to LA this time last year, and we were doing, I did the mix zone outside after Chelsea Liverpool, and we just got to, we were the guys from the Young Turks by a YouTube channel, and we were just abusing Chelsea players as we were walking past and having a laugh. We got Diego Costa laughing his head off. You know, there's that, and then there's I got to play Pro Evo with, which has always been my favorite footy game, with Karius, Origi, and Gomez at Melwood, which was pretty cool. But I think it's probably the big one, the one that I enjoyed the most, was doing Dizzy Pens with Sterling, Markovic, and Coutinho. Like, you can't even believe that, how that came about is just meant genuinely, like, it's a combination of being able to wield more power because we've got the commercial team with Ball Street who've got our back, which helped make that a reality in the first place. And then it's just brazen chancery of being in proximity to go, yeah, we've got what else can you do? And we go, oh, we'll do this. And they go, oh, no, I'm not. So if everyone hasn't seen it, you know, Dizzy Pens, something that we stumbled upon on the internet, and then me and Chris had done it for a couple of forfeits on the channel, and it was something like 30 spins, and then you had to go and take a penalty or a free, or kick the ball, whatever. We got into Melwood. We were meant to be doing this thing we do called the Zabby Alonso Challenge, which is just essentially trying to score Zabby's goal from inside your own half. And they put us in the indoor bit at Melwood, so you couldn't do it. So you're like, well, look, you've got them for an hour. What do you want to do instead? And we're like, oh, so we did a few things, a few standard things like American Shootout and blah, blah, blah. And then we just went, go on. So we showed them the video of Chris doing it, and they were laughing. And like the PR, the player liaisons and the PR guys are going, maybe just have to turn around and kick it. We're like, no, they're not going to be dizzy. It's not Dizzy Pens. And to his supreme credit, because he's one of the most loathed ex-Liverpool players of all time now, Raheem Sterling was boss, and he just went, no, I'm up for doing it. It's fine. And because he said it was fine, the rest of the lads had to do it. And like, look, Phil, we were playing Chelsea. It was the run-in, and we had Chelsea the week after, and it was like a crunch game for the season. And this Coutinho fell on his face after like 6 turns, and I'm going, and all the PR guys are like, you can see like their heart is hard out of the chest. They're like, go red in the face. That was just incredible. I'd seen the players, like, you know, when you get the players going, that was the best laugh I've ever had. And you think, you know, when we finally got the videos, it was a nightmare getting them cleared. But when we finally got them out and the response they had, yeah, that was the perfect storm of having an amazing laugh and also showcasing that we can go and do things, kind of proving our worth, I guess, in a bigger sense to people. So, yeah, that was, I absolutely loved that.
And I think the thing with that is you get the guys on board as well. It makes everything else that follows so much easier because you're then known, because they're going to go back into the dressing room and they're going to go and talk to the other lads, aren't they? And turn around and go, funniest thing we've done. Red Men have been in and we've done Dizzy Pens and this, that and the other. I remember you guys doing Dizzy Pens with Toffee TV as part of the, because you did the Merseyside challenges and stuff. Just one of the funniest things you'll watch on YouTube, frankly. So what's next for Red Men TV, Ball Street, etc.? So you've obviously got Ball Street North now and you've got your studios and stuff set up. So where does it go from here? What's the next plan?
I guess it's just about perfecting Red Men in some regards. Just focus on that first. I guess is that there's just loads of... the way we always did it was, I remember when it was me, I went on full-time, I remember thinking, oh, that'll give me so much more time to do stuff, and then I just filled my day up with things that you need to do, things that we've not been doing that. And then Chris came on and exactly the same thing, and then we got Tom on, and then Aubrey came on, and basically it's about, there's just things that we're not doing and we're not getting right and we need to get better at. And there's things that, it's short blanket syndrome when you've got you set a business up, to use an old rafferism, is that, you know, unless you've got like a mega books organization where you can afford to have a million people doing all the jobs, you take on everything as it comes and you try it to the best of your ability until you start to drown, and then you pull back a little bit on it. So for us, it's about making sure that Red Men's the best it can possibly be, and that's
being the best YouTube channel, being the best Facebook page, being the best Twitter, you know, Twitter account, being good on Instagram, making sure the website's the best it can possibly be, and we're delivering the best value for the subscribers as well. So that's what the Redmen has always kind of been, and it will always be for the foreseeable future. It's that, you know, I've made mention this before, is that Redmen doesn't make money. You know, it's not, we don't cream of this money off and go driving around in Lamborghinis. That's just a perk that comes aside. Aubrey's dad's got a Ferrari. It's a different thing. It's a different story. But no, it's everything we do on that goes back into making it better. You know, we get to a level so we can afford to take, you know, employ someone else who makes another area of the experience better and hopefully more engaging and more entertaining and all that kind of stuff. So that's where that has been and where that always will be. And then Ball Street, it's just about showcase, being around long enough. Football is very much, you know, it's a very tribal thing, and you know, sometimes you just need to be around long enough to become accepted by people. It's kind of happening with Redmen, and Ball Street just needs to continue to get bigger and better and continue to be that home for where people can just come and get together and have a laugh and not take footy too seriously and do some cool stuff together. So particularly in the network, what's amazing is seeing how these fan channels are, you know, more and more of them are cropping up on a season by season basis. Like I say, there's probably like 10 or more channels in the network now. By, you know, this time next year, I could see it being double that. You know, 5 years from now, I could see every club in, you know, in England having their own version or variant on that thing, and that's very, very exciting.
Yeah, as the sponsorship of Ladbrokes made a big difference as well with what you now can do and getting things set up, or
yeah, it's you know what it is, it's legitimacy in some regards. Look, I'm no great, I'm just not a gambling man at all. I'll leave that to Chris and Steve. They love an acha, them boys. I'm not into all that, but there is something that's being associated with a big name brand in that regard. It makes people think. Well, hang on. It's like due diligence, and there's a temptation with new media, and it happens. I remember doing we won the Football Blogger Award a few years ago, and did a speech about how brands are either terrified of new media or they treat them like absolute scum, and they just throw a few pennies at them, and they cause people to change their morals and throw away their right to make the content they want to make, etc. And what's been great about some of the, and it wasn't just Ladbrokes, some of the other things that the Ball Street Network has brought to us. Their brands are finally turning around and going to us, what's the best way for us to work with you? You know, they're not dictating to us how things should be done or things should be said. And that's a real, as I say, it's a real thumb up. It's a real show of support for the strength of what we're doing, because, you know, no longer are we it's proof that loads of people come to you and they go, oh, do you want £50 to do such and such? And you're like, and you have to do an arto and you have to do this and that. You know, we should be telling these people to fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, we should be able to say, no, listen, we turn stuff down, and creative people who create stuff for a living, they want to make good stuff that they're totally passionate about, should be allowed afford the opportunity to do that as much as possible. And that's about finding the right partners and stuff to work with sometimes to financially support it. And it's about having the bravery and the bollocks to be able to turn around to someone and say, you know what, no, I'm not going to tarnish what I do by having to associate myself with 500 people just to be able to keep the lights on. You know, so something like Ladbrokes, you know, is, you know, whether you're bang into the to gamble and what it means to football and all that kind of stuff. That's a different debate for a different day, but it helps say, well, if a major company like that is prepared to support it, then maybe there's something in this new media thing.
Yeah, and I think from a fan's point of view, we're not asked to sponsor. Well, we are, but we're not, you know, so it's Ladbrokes. Okay, just because you're sponsored by Ladbrokes doesn't mean all of a sudden I'm going to go off and spend a bucket load of money down at the bookies. But if it means that you can do even more stuff with Ball Street, and it means that at the end of this transfer window, which we're going to touch on in a minute, what a nightmare pain in the ass that is at the minute. If it means that you guys end up doing a bigger show that goes on, and you know, we've got something other than Jim White wearing a yellow tie and cheesy one-liners for an evening, then so be it. And you know, as far as we're concerned, the more the better.
Well, if it means that we can create a job for someone and take a lad who would either be working doing some menial job, you know, working in a fucking Costa, when what they want to do, all they want to do with their lives is edit videos. So they want to do something creative. They want to do something that they're genuinely passionate about. If it means we can create a job and give that job to someone who really wants it, then it's totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Which actually segues nicely on. Let's move away from you. It's all been about you, but let's move away from that and let's look at
Christ.
Finally, Liverpool Football Club. You mentioned, new jobs. There's been a few new jobs filled at Anfield over this closed season. Tony Barrett has been announced today. Not today, but he was announced ages ago. But the lovely official photo with his really poorly tied tie is out on Twitter today. Thoughts on Tony Barrett?
He's pioneered the, what I can gather, is the Chapel Street lean, which has not been seen yet. Chapel Street could be Liverpool's HQ. You know, normally it's the Melwood lean. Tony's doing what looks like the Chapel Street lean, which is great. You know, he's a pioneer. He's a great guy. No, I like this. I like Tony a lot. And I think we'll see whether it works or not. I think Liverpool have lacked an intermediary, I think, someone who's actively keen to engage with the fans and has an understanding of it. So they tried it a little bit with Jen Chang, and that ended up being a disaster. Yeah. I think he had actually had some great ideas, and I think the integration with some of the, you know, with the likes of the Anfield Rap and This Is Anfield and ourselves and what have you would have run a lot smoother and maybe been a bit quicker had Jen not completely catastrophically fucked his job up.
Yeah,
because he was very he engaged with us very, very well. But you know, someone like Tony Barrett, the good thing about him is carries the weight and respect of the journalism world because of his time at the Times, and obviously having come through the Liverpool Echo, built a phenomenal connections with Liverpool, you know, being the Liverpool writer for the Echo for a number of years. And now he gets the chance to step in and be that voice. Hopefully he's able to maintain the strength of his resolve and the strength of his own character, because I think he can be a real positive influence on the club.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we can tell the respect levels he's got by the amount of banter that is on Twitter at the moment, which all started with our very own CEO, Peter Moore. Thoughts on the difference that he's made so far? I think his Twitter game is becoming legendary already.
Yeah, his social media game is very, very strong, as old Peter Moore. I really like him. I'm a big fan of, I'm a big gamer as well. So I love the background he has through Sega and through EA as well. It's a bit mad. There's talk that big companies have figurehead CEOs. Some people's taste, because some people are minge bags and some people like everything to be really boring, straight laced and down the line and black and white. And for me personally, I think if there's anything that might hopefully come across in this podcast, or if anyone's ever watched any of our content, I don't like taking life or anything too seriously. And he clearly is the same. Some of the responses when he's taken on people on Twitter, and he could, you know, he could be a massive bellend about stuff, but he's not. He just goes, "Nah, like, listen, mate, I've been working all day. I'm taking a break. I'm in the gym. Maybe try it, you know." And he's just having a laugh. And from what I've heard from people who work in and around the club, and people who know people who know people, he's been a breath of fresh air, and I think he's reinvigorated the club internally. And hopefully, because he is a bit of an outside of the box thinker, he might get Liverpool back to being what Liverpool should be, and, you know, not just a generic football club, you know, having a bit of personality, a bit of character, and a bit of saying, yeah, actually, you know what, we're not going to do it this way, we're going to do it our way, we're going to do it a bit different. That for me is Liverpool. And it might not be to some people's taste, because it is a bit odd to see this kind of thing. I think it looks a bit strange, but he is in some respects very similar to Jürgen Klopp in that regard. That he is who he is, and he doesn't give a fuck whether people like that or not. You know, he's been the way he is. He's become the man he is because of the way he is, and he's reached the level of success that he has done in his life being that way his whole way. You're not going to come into Liverpool and change. And I think that's happened too much in the past. To people in the past, I think Ian Air kind of fell foul of that a little bit, and maybe Brendan Rodgers and what have you. They both feel like a great fit for the club.
Yeah, I must admit, I really enjoy some of the tweets that he's putting out. And there was one guy that basically turned around, and I think he had a pop at him and said, "Oh, you know, why don't you do your job and be a CEO, you know, instead of being on Twitter?" And he basically turned around and went, "You're on holiday with your missus and your kids. Just have a beer and relax. Catch me when you get back, and we'll have a chat." And the guy's got nothing else to say other than, yeah, all right, I'll drop you a tweet when I'm home. You know, and it's just like, where do you go with that? And I think the other thing that's interesting as well is that he's obviously picked up on the Twitter meltdown at the moment with regards to players, with his subtle little jibes about, you know, there was a, I think there was a fighter jet, wasn't there, on view from outside of his office, and he put a picture saying, oh, you know, yeah, just sending the guys home. Oops, there, hashtag there goes the budget, you know. And it's that kind of humour, I think, that is synonymous with Liverpool, and it's what we're all about. And I think for those who sort of turn around and go, oh, we don't want that from a CEO, honestly, give your heads a shake, because it's actually exactly what we're about. So off the pitch, there's been signings. On the pitch as well, we've obviously got the new addition of Mo Salah. Thoughts on how he's going to do? Happy with that as a signing?
Yeah, dead excited about that. There's I'd struggle to get excited for players who play centre half and defensive mid and all that kind of stuff. But it'll be great, you know. If we were to get across all the players we've been linked with across the line, the proper ones, you know, if we sign Van Dijk, Keita, and Oxlade-Chamberlain and stuff, that'll be a good, very good bit of business, you know, done, a great set of objectives reached, etc., etc. But realistically, centre halves don't get you off your seat. It's dead fast players who love running and scoring goals. They're the ones who get you dead excited. And if he has even a remotely similar impact to Sadio Mane, which he has the ability to do, brilliant. Genuinely can't wait to see him.
Gut instinct on Virgil van Dijk and Keita, however you want to pronounce it.
I'll go Keita. It's encouraging that they both want to play for Liverpool. And then it's just down to the scale of just how, whether we've got the bank balance to be able to turn the heads, I think, of the clubs involved. The van Dijk one's tricky. I don't know. Honest answer, there's too many conflicts. And unfortunately, as much as I would love to have an inside line, I don't. No. So I can only go, I read all the same things as everyone else, and I draw my own conclusions in that Liverpool aren't making any bold moves for any other centre-halves at the moment. Maybe they're prepared to play the long game on this if they genuinely think he's the top target. And there probably will come a point of no return where they decide to, they have to move on and try something else. But that's not now, so I live in hope that they'll get both of those.
I think there's a lot around the Keita thing that makes you think, yeah, there's probably something going on behind the scenes. Klopp's come out today and basically said, you can't see what we're doing. We're doing a lot. Patience is required. We'll see where we get. The Virgil van Dijk, that just has, for me, slapped all over it. Last minute transfer deadline day, Jim White announcing it at like 10 o'clock that it's over the line. And if it's going to happen, that's how it's going to happen. I don't think Southampton want to show their hand earlier. I don't think that Liverpool, I think there's a part of Liverpool that turns around and goes, it'd be really nice. But Klopp seems to have this, if we can't have who I want, then I won't have anybody, and I'll live with that. And you know, he did that last season with Millian in at left back. Robertson's been mentioned talking about Milner. Thoughts on buying a player? There's a load of furore on Twitter because, you know, this is a relegated club and we're looking at taking their left back. For me, we haven't played Moreno all season unless we absolutely positively had to, or he just wants to chuck someone on for 5 minutes. So if you're selling him and buying a player who's a left back that's less than what, you know, you've sold Moreno for, why are you worrying anyway?
Exactly, yeah. I think that's where it is. I don't think Liverpool are in the market this season for a nailed-on first-team left-back. But if we can get someone who feels that there's more to come from him, you know, maybe Klopp will feel, if he can get, you bring someone like Robertson in, and he's very much Milner's first choice, so Robertson might get the other 15, maybe makes 15 starts in the season, in a really successful, when you've got loads of cup games to play kind of season. But if Milner gets injured, he's more than capable of stepping in and doing a job. But also Klopp feels that he could maybe get more out of him, such that, hey, you never know, you know, he might be able to make himself first choice. Great. And failing that, as I say, I don't be shocked if a proper £40 million plus left back is almost number one priority this time next year.
Yeah, I think Klopp's got time on his side, I think. And I think he knows that. And I think, having seen what happened last season, I think he feels quite comfortable. And actually, I kind of like that about Klopp. And I like the fact there's pictures of him with a mad hat on in Ibiza, not caring about caring about football for a while. And,
well,
you know,
our good friend Steve Orr, who contributes tribute to Red Men TV put that. He said, you know, yous are all stressing about transfers and Jürgens and Ibiza with Miller on his head.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want? You know, we're all stressing out the manager of the football club for whom the transfers and the success of the team on the pitch, you know, his entire life and his future and his income and all his reputation entirely hinges upon how Liverpool conduct the business and how they're prepared they are for the new season, is genuinely on the pitch with an umbrella in his head. Why are we asked?
And that's probably the message to send out to any Liverpool fans listening to this. Do you know what? Don't be asked about it. They've got it. It'll be what it'll be. We'll get the players in that we can get. They'll spend the money wisely. Personally, I genuinely think if they can do the deal on Keita, they'll do it and they'll pay the money out. And I think Peter Moore's turned around and said, you know, the ambition's always been there, but it's got to be for the right players. And, you know, we're not going to buy a Mario Balotelli-esque priced player, you know, back then and then just end up with him messing around and we end up with a stupid overhead and all the problems are getting shot of him. I just don't think it works that way. Paul, I am really conscious that I've took up a lot of your time and I do appreciate it. Just before you go, if anyone wants to get involved with Red Men TV and as far as subscribing to the paywall stuff or going onto YouTube and interacting, do you want to just give them a quick rundown of what they can do and how they can do it for us?
So, yeah, I think that a good place to start is the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRedMenTV. That's where all of the stuff that's completely free to go. We do live daily news shows. We do the match build-up stuff, the match reaction stuff. Then all that stuff goes to the redmentv.com, which is the website. Everything we do is available there. But in addition to it, what we kind of say is there's three normally and occasionally a lot more completely exclusive shows there, half an hour, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, depending on how good the topics of conversation are. They're £2 a month. Moment, it's completely free for the first month. And effectively, what we're saying is, you know, if you want the extra content, it's there. If you just like what we do and you want to support the channel, then by all means, go and try that. Hopefully, it's little enough money that, you know, people could not be asked about. If you like the content, by all means, enjoy it. If you don't, and you just want us to be a successful independent entity, then yeah, thanks very much to all those people who did.
And when we get back to match days, I'm assuming you guys will be in your usual spot out the back of the cop, just over the way where the burger vans are.
Yeah, line of sight of Shanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to go and catch up with them there, you're more than welcome to. Paul, it's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. That's it for us on the LFC podcasting couch. There will be, as always, more pods coming up. I'm sure Nish will be coming back with a podcast in the next few days. Until then, we look forward to hearing from you soon. Have a good one. Cheers.
Lovely cushion header. But Gerrard!